Let's face it, romantic relationships tend to consume much of our collective emotional energy. Sometimes we don't know where to find the answers. I mean, heck, often I don't even know the questions.
Why is it important for women to support other women? Because it's what the guys do.
A couple of years ago, I launched Pink Wisdom in my living room here in New York City.
The best relationship advice I ever received was actually when I was married. I am happily divorced now.
To create a space for lovelorn women to discuss relationships, love, sex, breakups.
How do men respond to strong women and how does it affect?
How do you get your self-esteem and your confidence back?
All that good stuff. I would bring in these incredible relationship experts to answer questions and offer advice based on their experiences.
One of the best pieces of advice that I have ever received is actually from my mom.
After you have been dumped, the best way to get your self-esteem back is to fall in love with your own life.
So not only do I get to ask these experts the questions that you would be asking them if you were to meet them in person, I get to pass on all their well-earned words of wisdom to you.
I am enough. I am worthy of love.
I think that women want to know that they can trust. Understanding how to trust somebody is very important because we've heard time and time again how disappointed women can be when they realize they can't trust their significant other.
Hey everyone, it's Allison Chase. Welcome back to the podcast. We have a special treat for you today. It's not often, in fact, it's never, that we actually have a male guest on the show. But today we have just that. I am sitting here next to the delectable Craig Woolman. And the reason we have Craig on the show is a little bit of behind the scenes practice. As y'all know, we have a documentary out there right now called Under the Same Sky. We filmed it during the pandemic. It's at all the film festivals, gratefully getting a lot of momentum and lots of love. And in that documentary, we interviewed about 25 women from 22 different countries in their native tongue about overcoming self-doubt and love. And then we weaved that all together and created this sort of magical little piece. But in any case, our new project is we are now interviewing men. We are going to do the same concept. We're going to interview 25 men in 22 different countries from around the world, and we're going to get their perspective on things like cheating, feminism, what it's like to be a man these days, what their moms taught them, what their dads taught them, how they see the roles of men in society, what do they look for in girls, what are the red flags, what are the green flags, what turns them on, what turns them off, all that sort of good stuff. So the purpose of today's podcast is kind of just a little practice, and Craig has very sweetly agreed to kind of be the guinea pig. So we're just going to launch into some practice questions of what we intend to ask these guys in the documentary. So without further ado, darling Craig.
I feel like a pioneer here, breaking ground.
Question number one, darling. How do you as a man overcome self-doubt?
That's a good question because it's something that I think I battle every so often. And I think I look for reinforcement in my friends, my girlfriend, maybe even my work, really anything that makes me feel good. Sometimes it's a little more external than internal, and that's okay for me, but I generally like to try to find it internally.
And if someone was asking you for advice, like a young guy, and you were saying, hey, this is my advice, this is how you overcome self-doubt, what would you tell him?
Well, I'd tell him to first accept it, accept how you feel about it, and move on from there, because I think it's very difficult to overcome something that you don't accept. And once you say to yourself, yes, I doubt myself, I don't have confidence in this or that, then you can start building from there. And I think that's probably the best advice I can give. Everybody has to do it on his own terms as far as how to get out of that place. But I think accepting it in the first place is a great start.
Just acknowledging it.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on men going to therapy, going to therapists or getting a life coach to sort of get some help?
I think it's great that people reach out. However, whatever form that is, they can reach out to family members, they can pay for it through therapy, and I think it's great. I think they have to find the one that works for them. I think that just going to somebody without the idea that I'm going to spend some time, two or three sessions, finding if this person works for me, not just assuming that all professionals are the same, mm-hmm. is very important. And but I'm open to it. I think that men should. I think that men need it because of the stereotypes that men are haunted with. Absolutely helpful.
Stereotypes men are haunted with. What do you mean by that?
Well, that they're not open, that they're not intimate, all the kind of things that, at least, again, based on the stereotypes that women complain about in men sometimes, certainly not saying that all men are that way. and maybe I'm projecting a little bit, but I think that anything that helps you get to know yourself better is helpful. If therapy does that, that's great. There are kinds of therapy out there that are very physical where you get to exert yourself, and I think those are great. But I just think that men and women have to come to a little closer place to be able to be intimate and share things. And there are plenty of couples who do that already. But if men are finding trouble with that, then I think something like therapy would help.
That's a great segue to our next question. I mean, it seems to me like being a guy right now in 2020 is, you know, pretty challenging, to say the least. What is your view? And what's it like to be a guy right now?
Well, of course, I'm not 20 anymore, so I can't speak for 20-year-olds. I think that your question is probably posed toward them because I've been through all that, and my generation, your generation, we have been through our type of dilemmas and our type of problems, and we've hopefully overcome many of them. And I just don't know what it's like to be 20 anymore, of course. And social media, dating apps, I have nieces and nephews, and they talk a lot about how different it is to be young. But for me, it hasn't changed that much. I still like the spontaneity of what happens when you meet somebody in person and the chemistry and those kinds of things, rather than being sort of mechanical about it, which I believe has become part of younger generations' methods of dating and relationships.
How would you define traditional male-female roles?
Traditional?
Yeah.
Well, it's not my thing, but I would say traditional male-female roles, back to my parents, would be the husband is the breadwinner, and the wife is the homemaker, and the wife tends to raise the kids. And I think we're getting very much away from that, and I think that's a good thing.
And do you think that as we get away from traditional roles, that men can feel emasculated by that?
I think they can. I think men could have felt emasculated 100 years ago for different reasons. So I think it's a matter of being with the person who allows you to be yourself and where you don't feel emasculated. But I can certainly see that happening as a woman gets more powerful. If a man has grown up in the generation that wasn't that way and now he's experiencing it, it might be difficult for him. But I say too bad. He's got to accept it. And a man has to stand up for himself just as a woman has to stand up for herself. It's very important that somebody is able to say, look, I'm feeling emasculated or I'm feeling this or I'm feeling that, and it's uncomfortable, and what do we do about it? I didn't necessarily see that when I was growing up, and I've seen it more nowadays.
Mm. Do you think your dad ever felt emasculated?
I don't think so. It was more of a traditional household, and I think that they both had their place. They both sort of separations of power, and I think for them it worked out well. I think there were times where my mom may have felt that way a little bit. But otherwise, I think it was a pretty good balance.
Has feminism influenced your decision to do something as simple as maybe not open up a door for a woman?
I don't think it would stop me from taking the action, but it definitely crosses my mind. Is this the right thing to do? And certainly when it comes to things like putting a hand on one's shoulder, even if it's in a very friendly atmosphere, what's happening in the office spaces and how far the pendulum has swung, that definitely crosses my mind. And there are times where I hold back. In times where I take the chance, but it really definitely is on my mind.
What do you look for in a girl? What turns you on?
You mean other than nudity?
So it's nudity.
Well, I didn't say it. What turns me on? I would say first and foremost is the chemistry, being able to laugh together. I think laughter is incredibly powerful. And when two people get each other on that level, they probably get each other on a lot of other levels or it won't matter as much. But I definitely look for a sense of humor, somebody who can make me laugh and somebody who can laugh with me or at me, which is fine too. Yeah, somebody who can communicate and like Janine Garofalo on Seinfeld, somebody who's exactly like I am.
Hmm. And what is an absolute turnoff for you?
Oh, an absolute turnoff is somebody who's bossy, somebody who doesn't listen, somebody who rolls over at night to go to sleep too soon, somebody who leaves lipstick on my water glass. The list goes on and on, but I fortunately don't run into those things very often.
Mm. When you're dating a girl, let's say you met a girl online or something, and you have two or three dates, what factors determine whether you just want to have fun with this girl or you actually want to date this girl?
Certainly it has to do with what she wants, because if I'm in the mood for just something one night a week, she has to want that too, because there's got to be a balance. And but what determines that? I guess what determines whether I want to dive deeper is the chemistry and how well we get along. I mean, I'm sort of past the age where it's just all about the physical part or mostly about the physical part. So I need a lot more than that nowadays. And it's important that, again, like I said before, we can laugh. And when we can laugh together, it moves on for me.
Let's say you and this girl are now on date number 5.
Charlize Theron?
Yeah, with you and okay, you and okay. Charlize. Yeah, let's actually use Charlize.
Example.
Let's say that you and Charlize play tennis together. And this is one of the activities that you like to do together. Let's say that every time you play tennis with Charlize, and you're on date number 4 or 5 with Charlize, every time you play tennis, she absolutely cleans your clock. You can barely get a point off of her. Does that, as a man, change your view of her a little bit?
No. I would feel lousy by being beaten because I'm competitive, but I would feel that with a male, a female friend, anybody. So my competitiveness would sort of get in the way of seeing that as a problem with the relationship.
Hmm. What if she beat you at backgammon every time?
Well, I haven't met anybody who does that yet. I tend to win most of the games.
Better at golf.
I would love to find somebody who's better at golf than I am.
What if she did everything better than you? Would you be less attracted to her?
That's a good question. I think I would be a little intimidated, probably. I mean, I have my own insecurities, as probably everybody does. So I would think that that might be an issue. I think the chances of that happening are so rare, so it's not necessarily a legitimate question. But I'm not saying that because I'm good at everything, but the fact is that I want to be good at things and she's going to be good at things. And I just don't think that would be an issue. But let you know if I run into it.
Would you feel less of a man? Would you have less sexual desire for her?
Not sure. I'm a fourth child and I spent most of my life deferring to others. So I think I'm not as likely to be affected by that as maybe some others who are a little more type A.
Hmm. On that note, what did your mom teach you about love?
That's a good question. I think she expressed most of her love through her pets, and I learned to love animals through her. And I also learned that the little things should be forgotten about and that they're not worth spending time on, and that the bigger picture is so much more important.
And your father, what did he teach you?
Let's see. My dad taught me that actions speak louder than words. Actions are a great way of expressing one's love.
And what kind of blueprint did your parents' marriage provide for you?
Well, not a blueprint for marriage at all, because I've never been married. But I think their model was sort of working things out, no matter how tough things got, loyalty, and just being able to either brush things under the carpet or overcome in whatever way they do it. And that loyalty, how important that loyalty is.
Do you think anything about their dynamic has been a direct influence on your choice not to get married and not have children?
I never thought about it that way. I think that I just wanted freedom in my life. So that was more of an influence on my not getting married. And not to say that you can't have freedom when you're married, but there was one moment when I was 24 where I thought about having kids, but that passed. And I have 8 nieces and nephews, so I've had my moments with them and have time to be able to be sort of a parent in that case when I'm visiting them. But yeah, I don't think that the blueprint necessarily affected me that I can think of. I feel as though I sort of made my own independent person. There's some influence there. I just not sure if I'm in touch with it.
So many of our viewers are getting ghosted. They have these dates, they feel like they have a connection, and then the guy disappears. Why do guys ghost girls?
Because it's the easy way out, I think. Because they don't have the character to overcome their fear and their worrying about how they're going to feel when they do it and the repercussions. And I think it's such a cop-out. But unfortunately, since my girl Charlize did it to her boyfriend, it seems to have become popular around that time. And I think just like anything in life, when it's done enough by the fringe, it starts to be acceptable by the mainstream. And I think ghosting is one of those things where people start to accept it. And I think possibly the people who are ghosted feel it less. Maybe they don't feel the impact of it as much because they know this is what happens. I come from a different generation in that respect, and it's hard to do. It's hard to call up somebody or visit somebody and tell them, but to me, it's the right thing to do, and that may have changed now, and it may not be the right thing to do anymore. It might be too much. Some people may just say, just stop calling. Don't tell me. I don't want to know. Hard to say.
Interesting. So let's go a little further with this. What is it that a girl is doing on date 3 or 4 that makes you decide, I actually don't want to go out with this girl anymore?
Well, I've been ghosted, but as far as I know, I've never ghosted if it's more than a date or two. So I have ghosted in that respect. But ghosting to me is when there's a connection and then you don't get the call, as opposed to, well, you went out on a date and there was no chemistry. To me, that's not ghosting if you don't call, but maybe people see it otherwise. What drives it? I would say you're basically saying what drives a man not to want to be with a woman on the fifth date, because ghosting is just a way of saying, I don't want to be with you.
That's right.
And so I've already covered what I think drives men to ghosting, but as far as why he wouldn't want to go on another date, it's going to be about anything. It could be that there's too much dead space and they're not connecting. It could be that she's talking too much or that he's talking too much because she won't say anything. And who knows? I mean, it could be, and that's a tough question, but I think for some men, it's that they have, maybe if they haven't been able to sleep with her by the fourth date, maybe that's a turnoff if they're looking for something quick. So it's a tough question.
The one that we hear a lot is that when the woman, about the third or fourth date, the woman usually brings up, maybe lightly, a topic of, you know, what are you looking for? Because I'm looking for a more serious relationship. I'm looking for a boyfriend. And then she, let me rephrase it. What do you think about a girl who does the texting and calling?
Who's an initiator?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it gets back to two people understanding who each one is. And if that works for them, fine. If she's bothered by that, then the guy should be respectful of that and say, okay, you know, I need to do some more reaching out. But like any other issue in a relationship, as wishy-washy as an answer it might be, the fact is if these things work for people, it's fine. But yeah, if a guy's not initiating some communication, even just to say hi, I think it's a sign that a woman should be worried about, unless she just sees him as a person who's not like that, but he's showing his affection in other ways. If she's getting what she wants, the actions don't matter as much.
On that note, what are other things that guys do that women should recognize is, you know, he's just not that into you?
That's tough, because I think just as women can fake it, I think men can fake it. And I think there's a sexual element to that. I think that you can tell when somebody's really into you when it comes to the physical aspects of a relationship. And I think that's if that's not there, you can't stick with it and say, well, maybe this will happen, because it's always best in the first couple of months. And if it's not there then, it's probably not going to be there. Also, I think traditionally, women look to the man's relationship with his mother and where that stands. That's a good sign sometimes. If a woman is not seeing what she wants to see, it's good to look to that sometimes, I suppose. But
tell me more about that.
Well, it's just something I read. I don't know how much weight that holds. I wish I could expound on that, but I'm not sure I can. I think that it's one of those things where if a man is too close to his mom and isn't close to his dad, there's supposedly some kind of red flag there. If a guy's not close to his mom, that's a red flag. So it seems like there are red flags all over the place.
Narcissism. We know this last 4 years, we've heard a lot about malignant narcissistic personality disorder. As a man—
Did you say Melania personality disorder? malignant. Okay.
What are your views on narcissistic men?
Ooh. You know, women shouldn't think that only women have to deal with that. Men have to deal with that with their friends. And that's a tough thing, because we all like attention. We all like validation. We all like affirmation to some degree or another. And a narcissist often doesn't give that to you. They often want to give it to themselves and get it for themselves. So I think narcissistic men are very, very difficult to be in a relationship with. I've had some friends who have narcissistic husbands or boyfriends, and it's unfortunate that they don't discover that until later. And it's a toxic environment, and there's no way out except for the narcissist to possibly recognize it and maybe find some way to purge that part of the personality, which probably is a very difficult thing to do.
The bro code. What is that?
Well, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. I guess when guys are in the locker room and it's just the guys, what do they think about women that we as women don't really understand that they get?
That they do get that women don't think they get?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I don't spend much time in locker rooms, especially since COVID, but I think that men are willing to say things and have fun and make fun. I see this in some of my friends, and it's just a way of venting some of the frustrations in a relationship that's probably working otherwise. But I think that as silly as it sounds with men having the model of being manly, I think men still want to be wanted and men still need that. But they also have a thick skin and they don't like to be vulnerable, which is such a cliche, of course. But I think for me, that's the one place I do want to be vulnerable with somebody, with my girlfriend, somebody I care for. I may not be willing to be that with other people at times, but I look forward to that because I need that release just as much as she does. And I don't think narcissists give somebody else the time for that.
All the books tell us, all the Cosmo magazine articles tell us, girls, what men want most is to feel appreciated and to feel needed. Would you agree with that?
That's a real generalization. I'm sure there are plenty of men who feel, who want that. But I think that's a human need. I don't think that's just men. I think a woman who understands the man just like a man who understands the woman is going to be much better off than somebody who just gets into something thinking about themselves and not really understanding the ins and outs of the other person and anticipating them, mm-hmm. being able to be sensitive to the other person's needs and where they're going in one way or another and seeing, like I said, anticipating things that you can be ahead of. If somebody's going for a mammogram and she's scared, give her some flowers afterwards. Acknowledge her fear. Simple, mm-hmm. not difficult. Come home from work empty-handed, she may not necessarily feel duped, but probably somewhere in the back of her heart, she's going to feel a little hurt.
Mm. That's interesting because they say that men want to feel appreciated and needed and that women want to feel treasured and adored and told they're beautiful and seen and heard. And so you're sort of your antidote fit right into that.
And I did get away from the question, so I apologize. But I think each part of a couple, whether it's male, female, whatever it is, he, she, whatever pronouns are these days, that they just have to understand each other. It's as simple as that. And it's a question of how willing people are to reveal themselves so the other person can know them. And then not letting the narcissism or the or selfishness sometimes get in the way and being able to get in touch with that person's needs and not always be thinking about what we need.
These are tough questions. I know. These are really broad ones. And here's another one for you. Huh. Cheating. Why do men do it?
Well, when you're playing a game of poker and there's money on the table, it's like, you know, cheat. What the heck? Now, why do men do it? That's a good question, I think. I honestly can say this since my last name has not been revealed. I have never cheated in a relationship. And so it's hard for me to say why they do. But my guess is that there's that testosterone running through their system that needs some kind of validation and satisfaction. And if men aren't connected enough to the heart of the woman they are with or the partner, they're going to look for something, some outside stimulation elsewhere. And if there's a real connection, you know, let's face it, we never have a perfect relationship. And there will always be things lacking in ourselves that the other person wish we had and vice versa. And I think a man can run into somebody who just fills that void somehow and says, wow, wouldn't it be great to be with her? And then they don't have the wherewithal to keep it in their pants, and then they go and do it. And I'm sure it's much more complicated than that in some cases, but I think to me it might be where they find somebody who can fill a void that there's just they've tolerated for a long time, no matter how many good things they have in their partner.
Back to that bro code. What do guys think of other guys who cheat?
I don't respect the guys who do it. I think it's low. I think that look, if the guy's partner is relegated to a wheelchair and there's absolutely no physical part of their relationship, they can come to some kind of agreement. But otherwise, I think it's a bunch of crap. I think that your wife goes to work, go into the bedroom and take care of it yourself.
As a guy, do you see a cheater in other guys?
Well, I think certainly guys can act as if they are with the old big talk, no action type of thing. I tend to think that the cheaters are sort of stay under the radar, and the ones who appear to be cheaters probably aren't.
Interesting.
Let's face it, nobody wants to reveal something of themselves that might get back to the wrong person.
And do you think once a cheater, always a cheater?
Well, I think in the case of past presidents, yes. But no, I think that there may be certain cases where that's true, but I think it doesn't have to be, no.
Mm. One final question.
Ooh.
Define love.
Define love. Let's put it this way. This is a practical answer. How's that? It's when you feel really good about somebody more of the time than you feel not good about them.
Well said.
That's a very practical way of looking at it. Obviously, early infatuation is something very different, but love includes the ups and the downs. So if the ups are greater, I think it's a good thing, and it makes love very realistic and fun.
Nice. Okay, so now this is the point in the podcast where we stop the interview, and I want to get your feedback on what advice do you have for Pink Wisdom doing this documentary? What questions do you think are going to make a really compelling movie? Which ones are we not seeing? How do you think this interview session's going?
Well, I think it would start with that little game. It's, 36 questions or something? Mm-hmm. Those are very provocative. And if they're copyrighted, then you look at them and decide how you want to change them to make them your own. And I think that would be an awesome way to start a documentary, because they are very provocative and very revealing. And I think they are more revealing when they are asked between two spouses. But as far as an interview, I think they're probably still very valuable. But I also think that being able to find questions that get a guy to open up and be truthful rather than saying what he thinks you want to hear. Mm-hmm. It's very important. And of course, everybody's going to be different in that respect. But
what are those questions?
Yeah, that's a good question. What are those questions is a good question. I would say you could be direct and say, have you ever cheated on a girlfriend or your wife? That's a pretty direct question that many may not want to answer. But it certainly reveals something if the person does answer it honestly. Either way, I think asking him what the differences are between men and women is important, because everybody's going to give you a different answer there. And it reveals a lot about the guy, how he perceives women and how he perceives men. I think asking them something about what makes them feel really good in their relationship, just unabashedly good, where he can smile genuinely and is not just putting something on because the moment deserves it. I think that's an important question. And I think maybe even, what is he looking for that he's not getting?
These are really, really good. And how do you think this is going to fit in to this idea of interviewing all these guys in all these different countries and all these different cultures?
Wow. You know, I'm speaking from an American's point of view. I would think that the questions need to be modeled for each particular country, because what seems to be important in our culture, it might be very different in other cultures. So I think it's important to maybe consult with some locals in those areas so that they can tell you what their culture tends to stress.
Yeah, one of the things that we realized with the female documentary, Under the Same Sky, is that we're more alike than we're different, right? That it's sort of like we're women. Women are women, whether you're in Afghanistan or if you're in Cuba or if you're in China.
And you find the common ground.
Do you think that thesis will prove correct with the male documentary?
I think that American men are very different than European men, so I think you're going to see a fundamental difference there, potentially. But I just don't have that much experience with how men are in other cultures. I just know that they traditionally are told, I'm told that they're different. And but it'd be nice to find those fundamental. I think the great questions will bring out the fundamental similarities from culture to culture. Mm-hmm. But I think it's also great to be able to reveal the differences.
And if you were producing the documentary, if you were the director, what is it, do you think, that women really want to know from men?
I think that women want to know that they can trust and how to do that and what they can do, but certainly not their responsibility to be able to trust their husband for the most part. Their husband or their boyfriend or their significant other has to deserve that trust. But I think understanding how to trust somebody is very important, because we've heard time and time again how disappointed women can be when they realize they can't trust their significant other.
You know, Craig, I have to say that really resonates with me. And how I know that it does is that when you said that and you expressed it that way, my eyes started welling with tears. And I think you're absolutely correct. I think at its very core, that's what women want to know. And everything else is a offshoot of that.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much. I appreciate you being what we call the greasy pancake.
Or the guinea pig.
Or the guinea pig, or as you said earlier, the pioneer. Really, I'm such an honor and privilege to have you here and to be the first male guest on the Pink Wisdom podcast and Pink Wisdom website. We're all females offering other females advice and support. So this is a real shift. And I'm excited about it.
It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to see how it blossoms.
Before we sign off, for all our guy listeners out there, if you're going through a breakup right now, if you're a guy who has a broken heart, give us a little pep talk.
Well, I'd say you remember all those women through your life you had incredible chemistry with, but were never able to act on that? They're still out there.
All right, guys, that'll do it. Thank you, Craig.
My pleasure.
We'll see you again on the next episode of the Pink Wisdom Podcast. Have a great day. Pink Wisdom is produced by me, Allison Chase, and Sam Ufret, edited by Sam Ufret, and recorded by Andrew Thomas at Noia House in New York City. You can find more episodes of Pink Wisdom at pinkwisdom.com or anywhere you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you next week.